This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Chariot and Xiao Ning. It is 7:18 in the morning, Friday the 2nd of August, and we are running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, because we're asking you, is the economic impact from Linus worth the potential environmental risks? Do tell us what you think, because we'll be taking a look at the results throughout the show. In the meantime, though, there has been some news on the local front, specifically from Prima, which is the government property developer. They've reportedly seen 100 staff leaving the company. And these departures have happened either by VSS resignation or non-renewal of contracts for top management personnel. And this is according to the Malaysian Reserve. So the organization, according to them, has lost about 300 staff thus far.
So, I mean, that's a big number. I mean, we're talking about 30% of the company in total, right?
Yeah, I mean, sources tell the Malaysian Reserve that Prima has undergone a VSS in April. Now, according to them, the organization, I guess, in its efforts to also reduce costs, may move its headquarters from Ara Damansara to Cyberjaya to cut operational expense.
I don't know how much it will cut, though. I mean, going to from Ara Damansara to Cyberjaya. Cyberjaya is not a cheap place anymore.
Mm.
At least, yeah. At the same time, I mean, they've created the government. Prima's role is to create affordable houses for affordable homes, and shifted to move away. But they've, what we've noticed is that they've moved away from affordable homes and looking into more lifestyle concepts for middle-income households in urban centres.
Yeah, but it's also unsurprising, as you mentioned, that they would be looking to cut costs, because according to a special parliamentary select committee report, Prima carries a debt of about 5 billion ringgit, which will mature between 2020 and 2024. And it had an initial target of delivering 500,000 homes by 2018, but they've by and large failed to deliver on those targets. So they've failed to deliver thousands of homes since they were launched in July 2011. And in their latest annual report, they also posted three annual losses in the 5 years between 2013 and 2017. So it's not really a very rosy picture there for Prima.
Yeah.
I think this is part of the $1 trillion that the government owes, right? Our government debt. And probably this is also the list of enterprises or businesses that cannot make enough money just to cover their own operating expenses.
Yeah, some of the estimates say that it's like 8 billion ringgit has been injected into Prima, right? But they're still unable to meet their KPIs at the end of the day.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at the last three annual reports, right, in the 5 years between 2013 and 2017, losses spiked to 34 million ringgit for 4.3 million the year before. And this is in 2017. And like you say, 8 billion ringgit has been injected into the company. And actually now the company is going under due diligence with a result expected by end of the month.
Yeah.
And I want to know what the findings are, because a lot of money has been spent on this agency.
Yeah. So that's the thing, isn't it? A lot of money has been spent, but nevertheless, you don't see the product. Because at the moment, the target was by now, it should be about 500,000 homes being ready by 2020. Is about 1 million. We're talking about back in 2012. But right now, as of today, there's only 16,000 units of Prima homes which have been completed between 2013 to 2018.
That's 1.6% of their target.
And their
deadline is 1 million by next year. And that's obviously, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Maybe we need to use a school grade, right?
A
school grade. A would be an 80 and above. 50, by 40%, you'll fail. But if you're at 1 or 2%.
1.6% is borderline, didn't even sit for the exam.
That's falling asleep straight away when you get the exam paper.
I don't know how this agency got to where it is, but I mean their chairman Tan Sri Edichan said that the organization is actually looking at a turnaround plan. And earlier this year, our own minister Zuraida Kamarudin suggested that the possibility that Prima One may actually be dissolved, as it was in a mess.
Yes. So the news about the fact that it's only built 16,000 units, that was released in August last year by the deputy minister for housing and local government, Raja Kamarul Bahrain Shah. He also disclosed that the 8 billion ringgit had been allocated for Prima projects, but no one really knows where all the funds went. The other issue that Prima has been facing, though, is land scarcity, because news reports last year cited that Prima estimated it would need about 12,500 acres based on the assumption of 40 units per acre in order to build their 500,000 units. But they only ended up getting 108 acres, of which only 39 acres were suitable for development.
Well, it's apparently due to their business model. So what they do is they look for a piece of land. They think, this is the land I want. And then they pay upfront for it. But lo and behold, sometimes it's not fit for development, which makes you wonder what kind of due diligence they carry out, right?
And whether or not government agencies, government arms are, you know, equipped with the right skills to undertake development project. We understand that policy level, yes, but should development still be at the hands of private sector instead? Because they have been in the business for the longest of time and they would understand all this.
I mean, a model suggested to me by some academics is where the biggest landowner at the end of the day is actually the government.
Mm. Yes.
So why isn't the government giving the land to build these projects in a way or in, like, for example,
I'm the
landowner as the government. I hire a private contractor, give them a fixed margin so that I manage the cost of these houses. And because the land is mine, I can somewhat subsidize it so that the final price to the consumer, to the buyer, is much lower. But in the meantime, we have many multiple agencies running concurrently with schemes to kind of make houses affordable. But yet, the problem still exists.
Yes, I think one of Zureta Kamarudin's first initiatives when she took on the role as housing minister was to attempt to consolidate all of those ministries because she saw, I think when she took it on, there was something like 4 or 5 different organizations placed under different ministries, all looking at affordable housing. But I guess at the end of the day, we are going to be seeing some concrete numbers at the hopefully by the end of this month out of the due diligence report on Prima. So I guess we will have to put a pin in this conversation and see what the numbers actually show. In the meantime, though, there's been some other reports on Linus, and this is why we're running a poll asking you about Linus's economic impact or whether or not the economic impact is worth a potential environmental impact, because the government is reportedly expecting a waste disposal plan from Linus before allowing the company to build a permanent disposal facility in the country. And this would be an alternative to sending its rare earth processing waste back to Australia. So it's considered, it's kind of a compromise, isn't it? Because yeah. Linus insisted that it wasn't feasible to ship something like 450,000 tons of water leach purification residue. And even Australian officials haven't really been all that accepting of the possibility of accepting Linus's waste back into the country.
Yeah, so I mean, if we look at what Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir said, Linus will be allowed to build a local disposal facility to treat residue from its plant in Kuantan. There is a precondition which is set by the Ministry of Energy, Science and Technology, Environment, Climate Change, which is headed by Minister Yeo Bee-in, in order for the company to renew its license, but it will expire September 2nd. So if we look into the report by the New Straits Times, Linus was required to pay about 206 million ringgit in a security deposit to finance the project. And approval would then be dependent on the firm's finding a suitable location and also obtaining the necessary permits.
Now, I can kind of understand why, in many ways, a project like this is really about moving Malaysia up the value chain for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the question is, what do we do with this waste? Mm. Because it's honestly in an industry that you'll be surprised that not many countries want. For many years before this, in the 1980s and the 1970s, it was done primarily in China, where environmental concerns were not such of consideration.
Yeah.
But even now, today, they don't want this type of business. And yeah. Clearly, Australia doesn't want it, even though the rare earths come from there.
Yeah, but we can't compare ourselves with Australia, though. I mean, we are a growing economy. Not to say that Australia doesn't need businesses,
China doesn't even want it. So, you know, do we want it?
Yeah, but we can't even put ourselves now on side by side to China anymore. So, in that sense, are we really in need of that investment for, you know, that sort of businesses in this country? Not to say right or wrong, but yeah, it's that balancing act, isn't it? Evaluating whether or not the risk that comes with the from this business.
Is it a function of the fact that the government needs money at this point? Because the fact of the matter is that right now, China is the biggest processor of rare earths in the world. And we are coming in at a very close, I think we're in second or third, chiefly because we have Linus operating in the country. And we have, it is a significant economic draw for Malaysia. But at the same time, when you've got this, when you've got this trade-off that you've got a very polluting substance cancers as a result, as a byproduct of this rare earth processing. How do we mitigate the effect of that? You know, is there any way to treat this here in Malaysia? If there's not, then realistically, what are we going to do about it? Because if we keep on polluting at this rate, then we're going to be in significant trouble further down the line.
Yeah, so I mean, what's been interesting is that now we get to hear both sides of the story. The climate, I mean, the environment ministry have put out word what are the risks that we need to be aware of, and the economic side as well. They are putting some figures. You know, how we could benefit from this. We can't discount the fact that regulation could do something, enforcement could do something, and also technology, innovation, how it could sort of like as you mentioned, mitigate those risks. So it's interesting to have all this information now on the table.
So be sure to keep it here on the Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.